Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Dig. I am your host, Aaron Makeham, and this week I'm going to talk about the 1988 film Hell Comes to Frogtown, which is a very bizarre title. And what you need to know is that the main character, his name's Sam Howell, and he does indeed go to a town called Frogtown. So I had thought that I had already seen this film. I have some friends who, liked the film, and there was a Blu-ray version that came out, and they were getting excited about it. And I'm like, I've seen this film. Well, it was on the list of films that we had put together of things to review for the show. And, you know, in my effort to not buy a ton of DVDs, I thought, well, I'll see if I can find it streaming somewhere. Well, I couldn't find it streaming anywhere for free. I could buy it online at a couple different places, but I didn't want to spend the money, so I rented it from Netflix. And I got the DVD, not the Blu-ray. First of all, I got to say the film quality itself was actually pretty decent for the DVD. I was pretty happy with how clear it was. It's pretty bare bones. There's a trailer and not much more. But I knew it starred Roddy Piper, and so I popped it in a DVD player and I watched it. And I have never seen this film. I don't know if it's because I've seen enough still shots of Roddy Piper in this film that I thought that I had seen it, but for whatever reason, I mean, I thought I had at least seen something of it, but I haven't seen any video of this film ever. It's different. Is what I'm going to say. It's different. Now, I put together some sound clips. I had a couple of people in mind that I was going to do a review with for this movie, but honestly, there's just not enough sound clips here to really promote a big, long discussion of the film. The film's short. It's only, I think it clocks in at like 83 minutes. The biggest surprise for me of the movie is that the other main character, who I vaguely recognized, but wasn't really, I'm like, you know, I kind of know this person, but I couldn't figure out where from, and she looks a lot different in the other film. But I'm gonna butcher her name. I think it's Sandahl Bergman. She plays Spangle, who's the other main character in the film. And I'm like, man, there's just something about her. So when I sat down to start putting together some information, some notes for the show, I looked her up on IMDb. And sure enough, she is the other co-star of Conan with Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is a movie that really sticks out in my head. That's also a movie I'd like to review at some point, because, man, that was a big movie at the time when it came out. But she plays Valerie in that film. And, there was just a subtle recognition there. But I don't think I'd have to watch the movie Conan again. But I don't think she looks anything like that character. But I think mostly because in that film, it was more about her prowess with the sword than anything. Now, Hell Comes to Frogtown has a lot of visual things going on for a movie that clearly was a low budget film and meant to be like a B type movie. I have to say that, you know, you look at B movies back in the '80s and even early '90s, and you look at B movies now, and you know, I think there's a big difference in what they did. You know, B movies back then, You didn't have CGI, so you had to do practical effects and try to make everything work within the budget. And it seemed as though the B-movies were kind of played much more seriously. They were trying to actually make an entertaining film, and they did it in a somewhat serious manner. B-movies now, they know going in they're going to be a B-movie, and it seems like it's kind of schlocky when they put it together. And they use a whole lot of CGI because you can make this stuff on your computer. It doesn't have to look good. And it just never looks good. And it just looks so bad. It takes you right out of it, even though you know that it's a B-movie to begin with. And I think that's one of the reasons that a lot of these B-films that came out in the late 80s, early 90s are a lot of... I think it's why they're fan favorites. You know, it's one of the reasons that, you know, you take a film like, you know, like Sharknado or Sharknado 2, 3, 4, you know, those type of films. Yeah, they have their place. You know, they're just kind of fun movies you might throw on and watch in the background or something. But they don't, they're not going to be a cult classic later on because they were purposely made to try to be a cult classic. Where I think a film like Frogtown was like, we have a limited budget. And when you watch the movie, they have a very limited cast. You might have a half a dozen people who are actually acting. You have the people who are frogs, and I'll get to that. That you don't, you're not quite sure who they are because they're frogs. But you know, and actually considering that, you know, I tried to find any kind of budgetary information and any kind of earnings for this film, and I couldn't find anything online about anything at all about it. But I have to say that the frog costumes were actually pretty decent considering the time frame and considering just judging by the film, the budget aspects that came into play. Now, hell comes to Frogtown. We are living in a world where there has been, it's a nuclear wasteland. You know, it's a very desolate land. And our main character, Sam Howell, has been captured by a military organization. The military organization, they've caught him because he has been running around free in the open area and has been impregnating women. And he impregnates somebody's daughter. And this guy is not very happy with him at all. And he's getting ready to torture him. And during this time, these two women come in, and one of them is our other main character. I have to apologize for my voice. I'm not exactly sure where it's going, but I'm training for half marathon, and today was long run day. So I did over 13 miles, and I feel fine, but I don't know if it's because it was colder out this morning and breathing all the cold air or what, but it's like, I mean, my voice, my throat doesn't hurt or anything. My voice just keeps disappearing. It's very odd. Anyway, back to our movie. So what happens is they belong to an organization, a government organization called MedTech, and their entire operation, the whole reason for being is to make babies. The idea is that in this part of the world, we have to have men to be soldiers. And so we have to procreate as much as possible. And you're living in a time where there's not enough fertile females or males. And so once you find one of each, you know, you do the best you can to try to impregnate as many women as possible because you want to have more babies because you want to have a military force. Now, apparently after Sam Howell was captured, they took a blood sample or some sort of sample, and they understand that he's a viable candidate, that he's, you know, he has a, not only, you know, they test him out, but also he has a reputation of impregnating all these women. So the two people from MedTech take him away from the military guy who's very unhappy that they're going to take his prisoner, and they hook him up to this machine. So the next scene we have is Roddy Piper in a hospital gown that is backwards, so the opening's in the front, and he has what appears to be a very futuristic electronic chastity belt on him. And you're not exactly sure what's going on. He's not sure what's happening. And he meets the person in charge, the doctor, I think, in charge of you know, gathering fertile men.
Mr. Hellman, I can understand why you're so popular with the ladies. You've left a string of pregnancies everywhere you've been.
So far.
You have the highest spermatozoan count we've ever tested.
Must have been all that fiber I ate when I was a kid.
I'm authorized to offer you a clean slate. All charges dropped. Now, MedTech's main assignment is to locate and impregnate fertile women in the wastelands. Now, we need potent young men in the fields to assist in this great work. Men who can take care of themselves, who know the territory, who can perform under difficult conditions. Do you feel up to it?
Are you serious?
Well, maybe you'd rather we sent you back to Devlin.
Well, on the other hand, I've always been a patriot.
Sign this.
Now, of course, Sam doesn't want to go back to Devlin because that guy was torturing him and going to stab him with a broken bottle. So he signs the paperwork, and you know, he thinks that he's all free and clear. You know, he thinks that sign his paperwork, he's going to just be free and just wander the wasteland and just having sex and knocking up women left and right. But he's in for a little bit of surprise because as the scene continues, they unstrap him and he gets ready to go and realizes there's all kinds of strings attached.
The war reduced our male population by 68%. It made most of the human race sterile. But we're still at war, a population war. Each side is desperate to rebuild and rearm. Now that requires manpower. Manpower requires people. And that's where you come in.
Yeah. Stuck.
It's an electronic lock. Only we have the code. The ECR stays on at all times.
Right. Now come on, help me get this off.
It's in here. You're signed, it stays on.
Well, how am I supposed to, you know?
There's a flap.
It monitors your physiosexual condition. It's for your own protection. After all, it's government equipment now.
Now, Captain Devlin was sent back. Well, I can't say sent back. He was sent out to do guard duty at one of the exit points to the wastelands. And, you know, he's not happy. He's played by William Smith, who, if you've probably seen him in dozens of movies. He's got a great voice and just a very, he always seems like he always plays a bad guy. But he's kind of prominent in the film as, you know, one of the maybe six actors in this movie. Now, so they have a mission that they're going to go out to the wasteland. The idea is to take him out and you know, take Sam Hell out and find fertile women and impregnate them. And so they have to pass this checkpoint. And Devlin's there, and he's clearly not happy because it's not necessarily a demotion, but he's just kind of – it just seems like they – he did his job and he caught this guy, and now because Roddy Piper has a value to MedTech, who seems to be kind of like, I don't want to say the highest law in the land, but the most important. The idea here being that there's a lot of women running things because all the guys died in the war. And a lot of the women, we see, we have a female doctor, we have this female scientist as well. And their escort is a female military person who has this. They have this nice pink truck, and with a big machine gun on top. So Devlin, he's not going to let them through, and he's like, I can just leave him here, and you guys go about your business, and I can just take care of my business and just kill him now or whatever. And they're like, no, we have a mission. They take his mission very importantly, very seriously, and so. He finally lets him pass. And so, we're not exactly sure what the game plan is here other than they're taking him out to the wasteland. They don't really specify where they're going to find these women. Are they just going to, put up a sign somewhere, or are they going to just drive about? You're not quite sure. And so Sam Howell's kind of a little anxious because this Devlin dude could have just killed them all and nobody ever would have known, right? So they have this exchange in the truck as they finally are allowed to pass the checkpoint.
Hey, ladies, you just about got my ass shot off back there. Now we're going into hostile mutant territory at full throttle. Damn, I hope you know what you're doing. I hate to think you just lost.
We're going to Frogtown. Their leader, Commander Toady, has kidnapped some pilgrims who wandered into their territory.
And what's that to MedTech?
They're fertile women.
Why would mutants want to kidnap human females?
Ransom. Toady knows how valuable fertiles are to MedTech.
Or maybe he wants them for his harem.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah, and we're going to do something about it. We're going to get him out, and then you're going to get him pregnant.
Now, here comes some of the comedy bit of the film and some of the things that make the film kind of different and unique and, are chuckle-worthy. And the fact that it's played so serious is, it's kind of, it adds more to it. This is one of the reasons that, I watched the film the first time and I thought, man, this movie is really weird. And I want to like it, but I'm like, I'm not sure that I do. I don't know. And it's, again, one of these movies that I'm sure that if I saw it when it came out, I would think it was great. But, you know, now I'm older and jaded, and I'm just like, you know, it's whatever. But upon the second viewing and paying attention to all the little details of the film, I really enjoyed the extra effort they put in to really trying to sell this post-apocalyptic world. Like, when you're in the med tech facility, when they're testing Sam Hell, there's all kind of signs all over the place. And I tried to capture, you know, slow it down and check out some of them. One of them was about their business is all about making babies. One of them is no condoms allowed ever. And things like that. And at this point, we don't know anything about frogs or Frogtown. We haven't seen any of them. We have no idea what Frogtown is. It's in the title, so obviously there has to be a Frogtown, right? It has to be something that is a town that's called Frogtown. You know, I didn't think that Frogtown was actually going to be full of frogs. So at this point, I'm like, okay, you know, we're going to see what happens. They said they're going to go to Frogtown. They say that there's mutants. And you're like, okay. Well, they find a runaway girl. And she stumbles into their camp. Well, they capture her. And she's, you know, clearly very frightened. And the commander here is just, she's kind of very much in your face about trying to find out information and stuff like this. And the girl's scared. And Sam Hell's like, you're scaring her. And he tries to calm her down and this and that. Well, then we have this scene where the girl is... She's sleeping, and he's sitting there with his futuristic garter belt on, with wires running to a computer, and she's monitoring his, you know, vitals, so to speak.
You can start now.
What are you talking about?
The girl. I've injected her with Ovidol to facilitate procreation. That's why you're here, remember?
Just like that?
Yeah, she's ovulating and you've got a high count. Let's go.
Oh, come on. I can't work like this.
Come on, Hellman. It's late and I'm tired.
She's never ever brushed her teeth.
What is the matter?
Well, she's not my type, huh?
Your type?
Yeah.
You have preferences.
Well, yeah, you know, if I kind of know her and... a little chemistry there, and, you know, a little atmosphere would be nice.
Oh, next you're going to be telling me you have to be in love first?
Well, maybe you ought to try making love to a complete stranger in the middle of a hostile mutant territory. See how you like it.
You need inspiration.
What are you doing?
Relax. I've been trained in seduction techniques.
Right.
Now, Spangle comes out, and she's trying to seduce him by... I mean, she's not going to have sex with him, but she's trying to put him in the mood. So she's trying to, like, you know, undress and turn him on or whatever, and... The whole thing is she just does a very good job because it's played kind of comedic, you know, where it's very much, you know, she's very nice to look at. But at the same point in time, you can tell it's part of the training. She has no interest. This is a job to her, you know. This is like taking out the garbage or whatever. It's just something that she has to do. And so she's doing all this and he's just like, this is bizarre. But he ends up mating with this girl. And then in the morning, she wakes up and she's happy and she's, you know, kind of flirtatious with him, and she gives him information about all these women being held in Frogtown and the fact that she was able to escape. The other ones didn't because they're passives where they will not, they have no desire to take up weapons or anything like that. So Sam Howell and the gang, they go to where Frogtown is. Spangle dresses up like a slave, and Sam takes her in like he owns her, and he goes to this bar. Meets an old friend of his, and also meets the frogs. And the first time I saw one, I'm like, you've got to be kidding. I'm like, they are really they're really frogs. I mean, they're giant frog people. And things kind of escalate. He wants to get he's trying to get more money for her, and they're trying to find this the harem of women. And they get separated. He gets kind of beat up and knocked out, and he's woken up by a female frog person who's trying to come on to him, and he's like, no, you know, he's like, we can't, you know, he's saved because Spangle controls his, if they get too far apart, she has an earring that controls his belt, and it'll explode. So it starts beeping, and he's like, oh, no, you know, we got to get closer or we're all going to blow up. So he ends up finding her, and they end up, you know, rejoining. It's a very simple, straightforward film. During this time frame, we meet another character we're not sure of, who we see in the very beginning, and he is selling he's selling things to the frogs for nuclear weapons. And we're not sure who he is or anything, but he comes and goes and wants no part of this whole, you know, selling of people or whatever. That's not what he's in this for. So Sam, you know, he's able to, you know, save the day for the most part. He comes in and saves Spangle, and then they have this, I didn't get the audio clip of this, but it's because it's so short, but you have to see it. They're trying so hard to try to give us this this moment of showing that Sam's just deeper than just a guy running around having sex with everything. And he has this necklace with a little heart on it or something. And she says, was that your wife's? And he said, no, it was my daughter's. And they have a little, supposed to be a deep emotional scene that lasts about 9 seconds. And it just does not work. And it does not work so horribly considering the situation. They're in a town of frogs, for God's sake, that it's kind of laughable, but it makes the movie so much better. So they're able to get out of Frog Town. Then they manage to get away, and they're being chased by the frogs. They have a big showdown, and you know they have all the women, and, you know, and they're all they're able to take out the frog. They have a big showdown with the frogs, and they meet this guy that was selling, you know, selling stuff for nuclear arms, and we find out that this guy, he's sitting there and he's talking to him, and he obviously has a lot of hate, and we're not exactly sure what's going on. Well, I think you're supposed to not be sure what's going on, but the reality is, you know, it's Captain Devlin, because as soon as he talks, even though his voice is disguised, it sounds just like him. And we find out that he has a lot of issues with all the women being in charge. His plan is that he's going to get all nuclear weapons. He's going to just destroy everything all over again and build it up without all the women being in charge. So so obviously Sam defeats him. And then the main frog guy comes back and they have a fight. And Sam has a samurai sword, which they never explain the sword. He never really uses the sword. He throws it at Devlin and stabs him in the chest, but he never really does any kind of samurai swordy type things. But he gets into a fight with the frog, and they're on edge of a cliff, and he chops off his hand, and the frog falls to his death, and he comes back, and the car's blown up, their pink truck's blown up, and he thinks, ah, you know, he's a little upset, and he's like, well, you know, that's that, you know, he's kind of bummed out, thinks everybody's gone. Well, here are all the women were hiding, and you know, behind some rocks, and they come out, and, you know, he kisses Spangle, and she says, oh, no, and she pushes her little earring, thinking she's going to control him, but earlier in the film, when he was in Frog Town, they took a chainsaw and cut off the belt. So he's no longer her puppet. And he, you know, wants to spend time with her. And so it basically ends with, you have to impregnate all these women, and then I'm going to put in for some time off, and you and I can go away. Because the idea is she's not fertile, so he shouldn't be having sex with her anyway. But, you know, he wants to have, you know, find some happiness in his life as well. This is a very short film. You know, like I said, 80-some minutes. And I think that the pacing is very well done for this movie. You know, I try to look at a film for entertainment value. Is this an Academy Award winner? No. Do I think that most people will enjoy it, find some kind of enjoyment in it, yeah. Is it worth buying? I don't know. I mean, it's definitely worth a rental for the heck of it. If you find a DVD for $5, I'd buy it. You can get it on Netflix. That's what I did. Really, I mean, the first time through, didn't love it. I thought it was okay, and I thought, man, it's going to be a hard movie to try to review because it just wasn't the humor. I wasn't finding the humor in it. And then it was later on when I did a second viewing and I realized like how hard they're trying to push this post-apocalyptic world and what's going on. And the film does make sense. The script does make sense. You know, you living in a world where women are kind of in charge. Of course, you know, I would just be like, well, one of the hardest warriors we see in this film is a woman. So why don't they just send the women off the war? I mean, doesn't that make more sense? Then you have to worry about breeding them to make men in order to grow them into soldiers. I mean, the whole thing's kind of backwards, but the whole Frog Town thing really did throw me for a loop. I wasn't expecting them to actually be frogs. I thought it was just like a name. They were calling it Frog Town, and it would explain later on why it was called Frog Town, right? Like, I don't know. I didn't really think there'd be frogs. And then there was. And they were actually done pretty decently for the most part. And I would say that a big part of their budget probably went to those costumes because when the frogs talk, their mouths moved and things like that. And it was it was good. I mean, that part of it was decently done. And it wasn't like, you know, obviously, you know, you could probably do something better, but it wasn't so cheaply done. You're like, oh my God, this is just ridiculous. It was ridiculous for a lot of different reasons, but and when I watched it the second time, I was like, you know what? I really did enjoy this movie. It made me laugh, and I liked Roddy Piper. And as far as like, you know, the things you've seen him act in, there was a lot of over the top acting in this. But I did like his emotional state from really cocky to like, man, this is insane. You putting this garter belt on me, and then you want me to go and just perform on a click of a button, and that's not how any of this works, you know. I honestly think that the best character was Spangle because she took everything so seriously. You know, you bought the fact that she was just so backwards with her own sexuality, even though she lived in a world and worked in a world where it was all about procreation. And it was a job. It was her duty. She did these things because this is what she was supposed to do. And the fact that you're living in a world where they have to teach you seduction techniques and things like that, the whole thing just made me chuckle. It was pretty funny. Enjoyed the heck out of it when it came to that. And I liked all the little signs and stuff, you know, around there, you know, around the med tech offices. I understand how and why this is a cult film and a cult classic. I understand why people enjoy this and like this and, you know, comment on it all the time. And I'm glad that that was on the list. I'm glad that I watched it, especially since I thought that I'd seen part of this, but I had not seen any of this. And I was really kind of thrown for a loop when, you know, we got to the part where there were actual frogs. I don't know. The whole thing was just kind of funny. Now, I haven't seen the Blu-ray version of this. The DVD, I said the quality is pretty good, but I would love to hear some of the star's commentary on this, what they had to do, and the director as well, as like what he was thinking, what the time frame was for doing this, the kind of money they had behind this movie. I mean, like I said, this is a nice little independent movie that, you know, B movie, and it's different, more different than a lot of things that I've seen, and so I really enjoyed that. So if I was going to give this thing a rating, I'd give it 3 out of 5, and at least half of that stars for the cult status and the fact that I have so many friends that thoroughly enjoy this film, and it brings a smile to their face when they do talk about it. It is not a very well-known film because I started to quiz people about whether they'd ever seen it, and they were all like, no, no, no. This is a movie that should be on Netflix streaming for free or as part of their service because I think that it would find a wider range of audience. People and a lot of the younger people, I think, would really enjoy this. And also, you know, Roddy Piper is a draw, whether you want to believe it or not. I mean, he did They Live. And when he did that, I think that movie hit with so many people that it's definitely a film that, you know, made him more well-known. And the film itself was, you know, a very good story, but you have all those different scenes in there. And he actually had a chance to do some actual acting in that. And I thought that he did pretty good in that film. But Man, if you haven't had the opportunity to go check it out, Hell Comes to Frogtown is something that I would recommend. It's a fun film. Don't take it too seriously and just kind of roll with it. The one thing I will say is that DVD was very bare bones and there wasn't even subtitles on it. And I know that those of you that have listened to the podcast in the past know that that is a huge pet peeve with me, that I think everything should be subtitled. I usually watch it with subtitles on so I don't miss any of the dialogue. And I know some of the older DVDs, because you were able to hook them up not with HDMI, but with RCA jacks, the captions on the TV automatically pick that up and would play that. But with the older DVDs, the newer equipment, that doesn't always hold true. That's all I have to say about Hell Comes to Frogtown. I highly recommend it. And of course, doing the IMDb search made me want to watch Conan. I don't have Conan on DVD. I don't have any of the Conans on DVD. And the first Conan movie really was a really big deal to me when I was younger, being able to see that. Nothing really on the geek front right now. I wanted to mention that, I think I forgot to mention this last week or last time. Speed Racer is coming out on Blu-ray, the animated series. Now, I have it all on DVD. I would pick them up when they hit like $7 or $8. I'd pick them up when I have all five volumes. The big deal about the Blu-ray release is the fact that it's going to be the uncut Japanese version. And if you ever watch the ending of Speed Racer, the last episode, there is subtle differences. There's about 30 seconds difference in the endings. Maybe not even 30 seconds. It's very small difference in the endings of the two. And it does make it a little bit different, the way things are left for you. I'm kind of hoping that they do the uncut version, and then if there's not... They just switch to the Japanese voices for the snippets of film that we haven't seen, because that the American cast is so iconic. Those voices with the characters are so iconic. Speed Racer, I know, is a cheesy anime, and it's there's a lot of things to be said to make it like but man, I loved this show growing up, and I loved watching it all again, and it was probably had to be my introduction to anime, because up until that point, I don't think there was really anything on. Like, I never had Robotech or anything like that. I mean, this was something that was on all the stations when I was growing up as a kid, and you were able to watch it, and I just love this show. So, and I think it's relatively inexpensive. Right now, I can't find anybody who's had a review copy to say exactly what we're getting in the discs, how they're going to work. But I do know that it's about $20, and it comes out at the end of May. And I wanted to throw that out there for any fans of the show out there. Also, the Phantasm box set has dropped. It dropped on Friday, or maybe it dropped. Yeah, maybe it dropped last week. Kind of expensive. Saw the first Phantasm movie. I think I've only seen it once. I've never gone back to revisit the franchise. And buying the discs individually is going to be about the same as the box set, which is remastered and things like that. The price has dropped. It was like $70. I think it's now $50 or $60 now. I think it was $80. Now it's $60 for all five films and a bonus disc. So that's something to, I know a lot of horror fans and a lot of people who saw this movie, because that Phantasm was one of those things that was like always on like HBO or the movie channel when I was younger. And because the first time I'm like, what the heck is this? And I saw it and it was different. And I don't really remember a whole heck of a lot about it. And I think I've seen a little bit of Phantasm 2, but I don't think I've ever watched it straight through. But I want to see all these again. So hopefully that will come down to a reasonable price over time and be available. Right now, the problem is like all these Blu-rays come out, they take the time to remaster them, redo them. But trying to find a place to rent them is about impossible, because Netflix never really updates for special editions. There's probably 30 or 40 movies in the last like 2 years that have come out. They brought out Blu-ray special editions. You can't get those on Netflix. You end up getting the DVD, or if there was a previous Blu-ray version, you end up getting that one. So you can't get any of the special features or anything. And a lot of times these older movies, it must be, I always enjoy special features to an extent. But in this case, the case of these older films, it's always interesting to see how they got funding, what they did, and you know, the things that they, that the hoops they had to jump through in order to make something work, especially when they were on a very restrictive budget and they were trying to create an effect and like how they were going to do that. I always enjoy listening to how that all came to be. And I always enjoy, it doesn't happen often enough, but on these older films, especially like, you know, for a perfect example is Hell Comes to Frogtown. I mean, I would love a commentary from all the cast of what was going on at the time, you know, why they decided to do it, you know, if they had a good time, if they had a bad time, and just brutally honest about what's going on. I mean, you, the movies that are 20, 30, 40 years, some people aren't even enacting it anymore, but I would like to hear their thoughts on, you know, what was happening at the time, you know, and what they thought about it, you know. Or sometimes you see somebody in a movie and you're like, why would you ever take that role? Or why would you ever do that scene? Or why would you ever do this? And, you know, I'd love to see what they, you know, or hear what they thought about that, you know. The other thing is that, you know, I've been thinking about commentaries a lot lately because I love listening to commentaries on, DVDs, especially television shows. I know for a while there, you know, what I was doing was like with Farscape, that not all the episodes have commentaries, but there's quite a few of them. And I'm familiar with the show. So what I would do is I would watch, you know, three or four episodes, and then I would go back and I would actually rip the commentaries from the DVD. So they were just really long MP3s, like my own little podcast. And then I would listen to them when I was doing other things, because I know what, I mean, I've seen the episode, so I know what they're talking about. And a lot of times they would get off on a tangent. It had nothing to do with the current scene. Man, I would love to see a place where you could, I mean, I think that that would be a brilliant idea for somebody to make up a, even a subscription service where you can just get commentaries for all these different episodes that are out there. But man, it'd be great if there was a place where you could just trade commentaries. You know, everybody, people that collected those. I know it seems like a weird thing to collect, but I really enjoy listening to that and listening to how things came together and get the little tidbits of behind the scenes of what's going on and whatnot. Anyway, short show this week because short movie this week, and we have a lot more to comment on it. I have really been enjoying going down the list of films, and there's a lot of the movies on here that I haven't seen, and there's a lot of movies that I would love to revisit. And so my Netflix queue has suddenly become reordered with getting films that are on the list so that I have something here, so that I have something to watch and think about, because usually I have to watch the movie twice in order to get a handle on what's going on. But it's like a new discovery for me. You know, a science fiction fan, you know, I've talked about this before. It's like we never had much that was available to us. And then we've come into a time where everything is available somewhere, but there's so much of it, you can't pick through it, as opposed to having a very limited amount. So you're watching everything. Now there's all kind of stuff and there's no way you're going to watch it all. So going back and finding these movies from the 80s and 90s that I just completely missed because they have obscure titles or titles that you wouldn't think would tie into a science fiction kind of feel. And then rediscovering them has been fantastic. Going back and looking through there and trying to make my list and going, okay, what's this one about? Okay, what's this one about? And just reordering my Netflix queue so I always have something here or coming anyway that I can sit down and watch. And I have loved it. It's just really, for me, it's kind of like reliving my youth when I'm like, man, I never heard of this film. I never heard of this film. And even though I might have heard of the films, I have no idea what they're about. And so being able to find those. So my problem is I'm starting to gravitate toward the movies I haven't seen. I don't want to do that. I want to do some of the movies that I'm more familiar with because I figure that not everybody has seen everything. Because, I mean, I thought that I was pretty much on top of my game when it came to this stuff. And I'm finding out that that, in fact, is not the fact, that there's probably 20 films on the list I have not seen. And apparently, like, Hell Comes to Frogtown was a film that I thought that I had seen, but or had at least seen part of. I mean, I knew about it, but not to the extent as I know about it. Like I said, the frogs. I know it says Frogtown in the title, but I was still surprised. Okay, cut me some slack. Anyway, as always, scifidig@gmail.com is where you can find me. You can follow me on Instagram @scifidog. You can follow me on Snapchat if you so desire @ACMACOM. And you can go to scifidig.com to find all the other podcasts, all the other shows I've done in the past. And I think that's all the contact Star of a Side. We have a group on Facebook, Sci-Fi Dig Group, obviously. And that's it. I will talk to everybody next time. Over and out.
Jump up.